We're back here on In Focus News Radio KMAN. Going to spend a segment here now talking about the Bio Research Institute here at K-State, the
Biosecurity Research
there
Institute.
There we go. Yeah, thank you so much. Stephen Higgs, our guest here. Always good to talk with you here. Looks like you got here in one piece here on the roads.
Yeah, I suddenly realized this morning that since the high school was out, I could borrow a four-wheel drive truck that my son uses. But I've got to chastise him because it isn't automatically tuned into K-Man. So I haven't heard anything from you.
What? Your kid doesn't listen to K-Man?
I think he listens to K-Rock, but not...
Well, it's in the family.
Yeah,
but
I'll chastise him when I get home.
As you
I
should.
Promise. Yeah.
That's called good parenting right there.
I think we can let that one pass, though, because the guys over at K-Rock are good guys. So new events happening at BRI?
So we have spent the last 3 months since middle of November until, it's going to be 1st of February, in doing our annual preventative maintenance schedule for the for our livestock area. So, you know, the BRI employs a phenomenal group of people, the maintenance folks, the managers, the research support, everybody, biosafety. And so every year we close different segments of the facility down to do preventative maintenance. That helps us coordinate and optimize the research that we're doing. So they have been working very hard and getting folks in to do all the certifications and touch everything up, change all the filters to make it a safe, secure environment. And we've got researchers anxiously and patiently waiting to get in to start the research program up in the livestock area. That'll start on February 1st.
And research hasn't been hindered by this government shutdown, as I understand it. You guys are still going off doing work there.
Yep, absolutely no effect for us. I think we've got 13 research projects in the summer in one area of the building, so it's going to be a very busy place. And we certainly have a great collaboration with the U.S. Department of Agriculture, ARS and APHIS. Communications have not been happening during the shutdown, but there is research planned that is collaborative research with USDA. And hopefully they'll be back and active fairly soon and be able to move that research back into the BRI.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I know you've been on the show here a couple times since I've been here and talking about some of that research that's going on here. Is anything new you're doing this year that maybe you weren't doing in 2018?
Well, there's one project. I can't remember whether we talked about this last time. It's on a very, very unusual pathogen called Raethiobacter toxicus.
Hmm.
Anything that has toxicus in the name doesn't sound good, right?
Right.
So it's an unusual bacteria, native of Australia, that I've said this to people: Mother Nature at her most creative. It's a bacteria transmitted by nematode worms to grass. It infects the grass and then produces a toxin which is more lethal than ricin to livestock that eat it. So we have a great investigator, Dr. Jim Stack from the Department of Plant Pathology, who after, it's been a couple of years now, we've gone through a lot of approval processes and permitting to get that pathogen to the BRI. It's been received now, and he's going to be starting some very new and exciting research on that particular pathogen, something completely new to us that we've been looking forward to for a long time.
How would that be important here to Kansas ag producers?
Well, like all of the pathogens we work with, they're foreign pathogens. Some call them transboundary animal diseases or foreign pathogens, different types of thing. And there is always a potential, because of international trade and transportation and so forth, that these pathogens could be introduced into the United States. That's the reason we work on them, because they do pose a significant threat if they ever got here. And that pathogen could be introduced here through transportation, international trade, just like the other one. So that's why we're working on, you know, it's better to be prepared than to be caught unawares when one of these things suddenly appears from nowhere in the country.
All right. You know, we're talking with Stephen Higgs of the Biosecurity Research Institute at Kansas State University. I know you guys are going through certification out there. How has that process been going?
Very well. As I say, you know, we've had that one area shut down. So the institute itself is under the inspection protocols of the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the Center for Disease Control and then Homeland Security visitors. We have regular visits and also unannounced visits. They can show up any time and look at all of our records, inspect all of our facility, talk to all of our investigators to make sure that we're complying with the law and being safe and secure. And those inspections have gone very, very, very well. And we're pleased, and that's thanks to the staff at the BRI, and the biosafety, the lab support, the maintenance, and education folks, everybody.
All right. I understand we have a phone call here. So, good morning. You are in InFocus. What can we do for you?
As you being a very well-educated, unrelated third person, I'm looking for some reassurance about the studies on the viruses and things that are going to be here locally soon. Coming from the nuclear industry, you know, we've had accidents. And, you know, I know that the virus people have had accidents. A guy took some home down at College Station in Texas, and things have happened in the nuclear industry that got taken home by accident. But we have Geiger counters, and we can find those things. When we'd have an accident, and they happen, the injured person put them out on the plastic in the warehouse while they're bringing the ambulance, and we go over them and clean them up with a Geiger counter where we can tell that they're contaminated before we send them to the hospital. To reassure us about when those accidents happen in other facilities dealing with the viruses and bacteria and strange God knows what in other facilities, and they take them out to the warehouse, which is the transition area from contaminated or possibly contaminated to the real world, and lay them out on the plastic. How can you decontaminate a person if they're infected internally or in their body because you don't have a Geiger counter? Well, thank you. I'm looking for some reassurance here. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much for your question. So, safety and security is at the forefront of everything we do at the BRI, and that's true of other facilities like ours. What we depend on in order to ensure that safe, secure environment is facility design and operation, the operating procedures, and the training of the people. And, you know, in terms of an infection, like you say, accidents do happen. We've been it's not lucky. It's by design of those protocols and the training of the people that we haven't had something like that. But it's happened at other facilities. One of the things that we do is sort of constant preparation. So all of our people are very well trained. We have first aid trainers, and we have a culture of safety and security that's been developed over the years. If something happened, if there was an accident, people that work at the BRI know that it's not sort of a punitive thing, that we would learn from it, but they have that responsibility to inform us. And that's part of the culture that makes us so safe and secure. If an accident happened, we would be notified. We have strict protocols that people adhere to, they're well trained in, to inform a sort of a chain of command by safety folks and so forth. But then we, believe it or not, we actually rehearse with emergency services at the BRI. We've had announcements on the radio and came on about that and in local newspapers. Because a facility like ours, if the local population see fire trucks, ambulance, and the police with flashing lights outside that facility, there's potential concern. But what we do is we work with first responders, we work with the police, ambulance, and fire folks. We have relatively regular meetings, so they know what we work with, how we would deal with it, and what to do safely. And we've actually had rehearsals where we have pretended that somebody has had an accident at the deepest part of the BRI, and then go through and rehearse how we would extract them to make sure that, you know, if they were infected, if their clothes were contaminated, how we would decontaminate that inside of containment and be able to dispose of it safely, and actually get that person, our pretend accident victim, all the way over to Via Christi, to the hospital. And we've rehearsed that. And we have had reports when people haven't read those notifications or heard those notifications of, you know, there's a lot of flashing lights outside the BRI, what on earth's going on? We say, okay, this is a carefully coordinated and planned exercise, and our security folks and others do a great job at that.
Yeah, and, you know, there's, outside of that, there's things, factors you can't always control, like the weather and things like that. I don't know if that makes a major impact on you. I don't know how something like yesterday's ice storm would affect you guys or not. Or, you know, just thunderstorms, tornadoes.
Yeah. It's a very, very sophisticated building. Very carefully controlled in terms of the environment and all of the power supply and communications and so forth. We're on some separate systems to the rest of the university so that, you know, we don't lose power, but we've got generator systems as well as backup, and we test those routinely. I think the only thing that doesn't work in the building when we go onto emergency power is my desk phone, and I don't have a problem with that. But the building is constantly monitored. It's constantly communicating its status to our maintenance staff and our managers and so forth. So. And we do keep a careful watch on the weather. We can prepare for that if necessary.
All right. We got one more phone call, and then we'll probably be about wrapped up here with Stephen. Go ahead, caller. You're on In Focus.
Yeah, good morning. Glad you can make it out in the snow. But anyway, I posed the question about 15 years ago or so to several people in the area, prominent people, the director of emergency preparedness, the fire chief, the police chief, two or three other people. And my question was, what happens if we have a bioterrorist attack in this area? Who is in charge? Who becomes in charge? Nobody could give me an answer. They say, well, it's the other guy. Well, nobody wants to take credit. I never did get an answer. And even now, we have more reason to be concerned because we're getting the new lab up there, and we have your lab. We're sitting in a pretty good hot spot with Fort Riley about 8-10 miles away, and off at Air Force Base, Tuttle Creek Lake, State Capitol, Kent State University. I think we're probably on the radar if they ever did launch anything to this area, if they could get it here, if they didn't shoot it down. You seem to be very well informed. Could you please maybe advise me and the listening public who would be in charge, who would be looked to? And if you called some of the offices and you can't get into them because they don't answer the phone or whatever, or nobody's there, Would you expand on that? And I'll hang up and listen. And thank you very kindly for everything you're doing.
Well, thank you for the question. I'm not sure I can give you the complete comprehensive answer to that. But with any bioterrorism attack, it would be initially sort of state government would be involved as soon as it was detected or suspected. And then I'm sure it would elevate up to the federal government very quickly. We do have exercises actually here in Manhattan that are very, very carefully coordinated with people from all over the United States coming in, for example, to the Department of Agriculture up on the hill here, the Kansas Department of Agriculture. And that is rehearsing for an event that could happen naturally, like an introduction of foot and mouth disease, for example. That would be very similar in the way that was handled to a real, can I say, bioterrorist event. We've also got a group at the BRI called the National Biosecurity Agricultural Biosecurity Center, NABC. And they do a lot of training for first responders of how to work in circumstances where there's suddenly a biological agent detected. And then they also work with the Kansas Department of Agriculture for that. So I'm not probably satisfying you completely with that answer. You can email me, shiggs@k-state.edu, and I will put you in touch with people to try and get that answer for you.
All right. Well, Dr. Stephen Higgs, we're out of time, but appreciate you coming on here on the show and braving the cold, and we'll talk to you again next month.
Thanks very much, Brandon. Pleasure to be here.
All right. Again, Dr. Stephen Higgs with the K-State Bio Research Institute here, Biosecurity Research Institute. I'll get that right sometime. We'll return with In Focus after this on News Radio KMAN.
KMAN Morning News brought to you by Manhattan Appliance and Sweep Source, your appliance specialist, located in the West Loop Shopping Center.
What if donut shops were like most investment firms?